My notes are not good on this because after 15 minutes, I'm like, boy, did I make a mistake.
Here we are, born to be kings. We're the princes of the universe. Here we belong, fighting to survive in the war with the darkest power.
Hello and welcome to The Great 80s, a great 80s movie debate where we see if the movies of the 1980s still hold up today. If you're a child of the 80s, a fan of classic films, or just a movie geek, you've come to the right place. Today we're discussing 1986's Highlander, directed by Russell Mulcahy and starring Christopher Lambert, Roxanne Hart, Clancy Brown, Sean Connery, and Hugh Quarshie. My name is Matt, and our illustrious panel of 80s experts includes Christy.
I missed you guys.
Bullshit.
Dave.
I forgot I had to do this.
Chris, I'm totally unprepared.
We are the princes of the universe, Chris, tonight.
Okay.
And as you heard, Chris.
There could be only one movie that's worse than Tron, and we found it.
Well, what we usually like to do is go around the table to find out everyone's experience with this movie, but I don't like to do that this episode, but I guess I have to.
Do it!
I'll start off with saying, this used to be my favorite movie since about 1988 till about 40 minutes ago. And I did not see this in theaters. I saw this on video. So I'm guessing 88, 89, this is the period of time, or 87, 88, I guess when it actually took a year or two for movies to come out on videotape, and I loved it. I watched it, God, probably 50 to 100 times.
Oh my God.
Bought every edition that ever came out, got when I had a Laserdisc player, got the Laserdisc edition, and then the crappy sequel came out, then even crappier sequels, and then put it aside until this recording, and well... we'll get into what has happened since then. Let's find out everybody else's experience. Let's start off with, well, we'll start with Christy since she's sitting here patiently to my right. Like Dave does it. Chris is during Swick.
Actually, I watched the TV show first. I was intrigued by the TV show. And then I was like, I think I'm going to watch this movie because apparently it came from a movie. And then I watched the movie. Probably, what was that, the 90s? That the Highlander show? Came out?
The TV show?
Adrian Paul.
Probably, yeah.
No.
The TV show.
Yeah, the TV show. Yeah, but it wasn't Adrian Paul, was it? Yeah, it was Adrian Paul. Okay, yeah. That was a good show.
I wouldn't know. I don't know.
All right, Chris, what's your experience with Highlander?
Highlander is you.
Ah.
It's just knowing you back in the movie theater days that you loved Highlander and you always talked about it. I never seen it. Like... the whole thing back then, maybe bits and pieces over the years, but I never saw the whole thing as a whole. I just know you loved Highlander. Highlander was you. You were Highlander.
I did. I think my favorite ball busting you ever did to me at the movie theater was when, what is his name? What was the movie? Pocahontas came out when Mel Gibson was, what was the character's name? John Smith?
Smith, yeah.
When he was John Smith, I was making fun of you that he was in a cartoon, and I said, hey, here's my impression of Mel Gibson, and I was doing my John Smith impression. You go, oh yeah, here's my impression of Christopher Lambert. You grab a cup and get on your knees and go, spare change, spare change.
That was good. I have no regulation of that at all. Yep.
That was the best you ever got me. Well, maybe not ever, but at the time.
Wow.
Spare change. That's funny.
That is funny.
Your younger self just made your older self laugh. It's like Back to the Future.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
All right, Dave, what's your experience with this fine piece of cinema?
Mine's like his. You know, it was funny because you're sitting there talking about how you got it on video and you watched it over and over again. And Chris and I both, this is all right. This is the sound of two people shaking their heads. You ready?
Yep.
That's it. That's the two of us. We kind of looked at each other and were like, how can he watch this over and over again?
Oh, my God.
But everybody's got their own cup of tea, and I knew this was yours. I never saw it until buying it for $5 on Amazon Blu-ray.
So did I. Know this. I watched it on demand.
It's because you're too lazy to go downstairs and get out of the goddamn basement.
Step downstairs right over there.
Wait, you watched it on demand and you had the disc as well?
But here's the reason. I got home from work. I think it was actually Thursday. And I was upstairs and my bed was there, right? We don't have a Blu-ray player upstairs. Okay. It's only in the living room. And I'm like, I want to lay in my bed. I'm so tired, right? Right. I said, where was on demand? And I searched HIG and boom, there it was, Highlander. And then it expires next May.
Next May.
I can watch it every year.
Probably watch this before the next episode of The Gradys is out.
Oh, that's a fucking slap in the face.
But still true.
This is monthly minus every other month.
I know. What's the date? I didn't even check the date. Today's the 31st. And yeah, there's physically no way to have this out in May.
As far as I'm concerned, we record it in May.
Well, as long as we finish in the next 3.5 hours, we'll be good.
So there, exactly. Yeah. It's every monthly when Dave comes over.
We're like moonlighting, okay? It's just like we got to make a joke of it when we have a new episode.
Yeah, we do.
No, I never saw this until now. I never cared about movies like this, and I don't know anything about him. I think when you brought it up that you were going to do this, it's that the only movie I've ever seen that he was in was that Greystoke Tarzan movie.
Yeah.
Because that used to be on Prism all the time, and I remember watching it. But other than that, I don't know this guy from anything. And I knew that, like, anytime one of his movies was coming out, Chris was always like, oh, Matt's going to be excited. And I was like, who the hell is this guy?
I was. I mean, what came out while we were... Well, the Highlander 2 and 3 came out when we worked in theaters. Fortress was supposed to be his next big one. Now, that was a complete steaming pile of dog shit. And... Mortal Kombat was the other one that came out while we still worked in the theaters. And I would sit there and usually just maybe the three of us and our friends Tim and Steve would be the only ones in the theater watching these movies, only because we, you know, would watch midnight movies, good or bad.
No matter what it was, yep. We watched everything.
Yep.
I don't remember what.
He reminds me of like the Down syndrome cousin of Thomas Jane.
Come on.
Thomas, who I love.
I'm not arguing the Down syndrome part. I'm arguing who is he the cousin of. I don't know that guy. I'm not defending anything with him anymore.
Is he from Hung, right? Thomas Jane? Is that
his name? He does have a resemblance.
Yeah, he does. But Thomas Jane's so cool, good looking, and awesome. Then there's Lambert.
You said Lambert.
Well, it's
Lambert.
It's Chris. His the true pronunciation of his name is Christophe Lambert. It is, but the American version is Christopher Lambert.
Cleveland wins the pennant. Man, this is great. I love sitting here and not having to like having to talk about this stuff, and I can just listen to you struggle.
Who, me?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, this is gonna be, I just don't know what the hell my 90s version of myself was thinking.
Go back in time and slap him.
Well, let's get into this. First of all, my first note was that this was made by the Hollywood Titan Canon Films.
Oh, they made some good films. Stallone films.
Oh, did they?
So they made films.
Don't start.
That might be a better conversation. Let's talk about that for a while.
Yeah, they made a bunch of action movies in that era.
For some reason, whenever I see the logo, I think RoboCop, even though I don't think they had anything to do with RoboCop, because it looks like the OPC symbol to me.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
So I always associate them with RoboCop for no good reason.
Mm-hmm.
But a bad sign to start to any movie is when you have to have a faceless voice explain to you what's about to happen.
And read the same thing that's on the damn screen. Yes.
Up here, I have opening words.
Yeah.
That just bothers me.
We know how much you love to read during a movie.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. I don't want to read. I want to watch.
And yet you still like Star Wars.
So that's cool.
Nobody's reading that to you, though.
That's true.
Yeah. Oh, yes. No one's reading it to you. Yes. Thank you, Dave.
What? That is a bad sign.
Yep.
When in general, when that's happening.
Yes. Yeah. Which I didn't realize back then until now. Oh, the one interesting piece of trivia I found about that scene in particular is that when they decided they needed to put that in, it was well past post-production. And they met up with Sean Connery somewhere on the road and actually recorded him reading that in the bathroom. That's why it's that kind of echoey sound.
Wow. Yep.
Many years ago,
he was right next to the Highlander.
Don Pollock.
Listen close enough, you can hear him wipe.
You hear me in the background? He's taking a shit.
Please pass.
I can't spare a square.
Not even one square.
God, those jalapenos.
So after this, yeah, after having to learn something. What's that?
After the opening, there's, I swear, 10, 12 minutes of wrestling.
There's 10, 12 minutes of wrestling, but there is, I've tried to star when there's something good, and there's, I have two pages of notes in front of me, and this is the only star I have so far, is that the camera work in this arena from the crowd, the entire shot of almost every square inch of the arena with one camera shot to the character Connor McLeod's face is pretty good for 1986.
I have to say this, I knew it was on like a helicopter,
yes, yep,
toys are.
I wrote and XFL. That was
cool. It's a drone.
It's a drone.
It was pretty cool flying to his head, and then you see his just his eyes in the light.
Okay.
Remember that part?
Yes.
You guys are so pathetic. You are grasping at straws.
Trying to find any artistic merit in this movie.
Sad part is we're like 5 to 10 minutes into the movie, and I find myself rooting more for the Fabulous Freebirds than anything else going on in this movie. I want them to beat up the Tonga twins or whatever they're, whoever they're wrestling.
Wrestling was huge then. No.
The Wild Samoans. It was the Wild Samoans. That's who they were wrestling.
Do you remember? I remember this. It's burnt in my retinas. The guy in the red tights in the opening. I don't know the guy's name.
He's still involved with the WWE today. You see him around. Doc Hendricks and the Fabulous Freebirds.
Watch this scene again, please. The guy has tight, and you see the tip of his penis. Like you see the.
You know, I'm not no spoilers to the end of this episode, but I ain't watching this again.
You see the whole package, and the next scene it shows you, and I'm not trying to be funny.
Yeah,
there's like a kid, a girl who's like maybe 10, 12, 13 years old,
yeah,
with her tongue out going. I swear to God,
what?
You have to. You
someone
have
had potatoes.
It's literally the next scene. You see his package. Next scene. Blah, 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 blah.
What? Every time we see one of these movies, you're spotting penis.
That's what I like.
That's his Mr. Skin.
It was
yeah, it was Teen Wolf, and then you saw the guy's balls in Road Warrior. And oh, that's right. You can tell whether or not he's circumcised through his pants.
He wasn't.
He wasn't.
But she was. It was just a weird scene. I'm like, whoa, what am I watching here? For like 2 seconds, I was like, I was kind of, you know, grossed out.
You were interested.
A little bit.
Yeah. Well, if you were interested at this point, we through a series of events that are not described, which should be described, that aren't described, we meet the character Fazil in the parking lot, who's the most unconvincing anything ever. I mean, this
reminds me of Mr. Anderson's.
Yeah, except like Mr. Anderson, who's been working as a security guard at Hostess for a little while.
There's no way. The backflips.
I have two comments about backflips. One, there ain't no way this guy's doing backflips. And my second comment is that really the most efficient way to get from point A to point B?
It was right. One of the worst fighting scenes ever
seen. After two flips, you can pretty much run and get to where you're going faster than that.
Is this in the parking garage?
This is in the parking garage.
Okay, because when I was watching this, I swear to God, I thought I turned it on in the middle of the movie. Like, all of a sudden, it's wrestling. I thought it was like, oh, this is a big action sequence in the middle of the movie. And I checked. I was like, no, this is the fucking beginning.
And every car was parked touching each other so they could run on top of all the hoods. Yep. Seriously, you couldn't even open the doors.
Yep. Another bad effect of watching this movie today, 2014, is this scene, the focus on the cars, because every single car in there dates this movie.
Yeah. I happen to love those cars.
And though, if you don't notice that the cars are outdated when they, well, let's go through the fight quick. We'll just say they fight and McLeod, Christopher Lambert, wins by chopping off Fazil's head and something starts happening. Lightning shoots out of this guy's head and starts surrounding the cars and works its way towards Connor. Not a single car alarm goes off out of the hundreds of cars that this lightning wrecks.
Were there car alarms then?
I don't. That's what I mean. That's what dates this movie.
Okay.
Between the actual appearance of the cars and the fact that there's no car alarms, because that's today, that would be the first Foley effect that would be added to this scene.
It was hysterical. It was a funny scene to watch.
And what was the sword like on top of that dirty light or something like that? Or no, that's where he hit it when he was.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah. That's where he hit it. Yeah.
Okay. It's all coming back to me now, unfortunately.
Oh man.
I have to say, okay, now I like the TV show. This movie is something. the quickening is the best orgasm ever.
What?
Have you, did you, when you're watching his face, that's like beyond an O face. That's an oh my God face.
That's true.
It was like, ha, ha, ha.
And then he screams in utter pain. Ah, falls to his knees and gets up and just walks away and like nothing happened.
Yeah. Skadoosh. So what is that? It's called the quickening when the lightning comes
down?
It
is called the quickening. Now here is, here's where being a obsessed with the movie and the TV show and the books and everything else that came out with it fills in a lot of gaps that I didn't realize after all these years are in this movie. The lightning is effectively the transfer of all the knowledge and power from the loser of the match into the winner. Right. But there's no hardly any explanation of this in the movie. You might be able, if you really pay attention, you know, God bless you if you do, to every second of this movie, you might be able to figure that out. This is something that I knew coming into the movie, and now I'm watching this with fresh eyes to re-review it like we do, and there's really never a good explanation of this.
You're right. It's not explained at the beginning. The only person that even gives you a little bit of help, like you said, is, what's his name? Lex Luthor. What's that guy's name?
Clancy Brown.
Clancy Brown, yeah.
Does he kind of explain that a little bit, when they're fighting in that broken down castle kind of thing, maybe?
Which, for me, he was my favorite part of the movie.
Because he was Lex Luthor?
No. Oh, he was so... I think the first half, he was so cool and just so awesome to just see him walk and talk and everything. And he reminded me of the Terminator kind of person. I mean, the same kind of jacket almost too. Well,
let's explain this, because this is a hard thing to explain. I think positive for the movie. I think they did a good job of going back and forth through time without it being too confusing. Now, trying to describe what's going on is difficult, but I think watching it and watching it with fresh eyes, I still think they do a good job of going back and forth without really, you know, losing the viewer.
It was like Lost, how they would they'll go back and forth in time. And
yeah,
that's a good analogy, and I will give you that, because that part wasn't like, I understood that from not knowing what it was, and I didn't need some big special effects of like him going through some like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure tube or something.
Right,
like,
yeah, right.
Like, it just kind of happened, and it was like, I'm fine with it. That part, I will give you that.
Okay,
I did just want to give him a lozenge though.
Kurgan, no. So
loud.
In the movie, we are now in 1536 in the Highlands of Scotland, and we're at the Clan MacLeod battle, and that's where we meet the Kurgan, who just goes by Kurgan for the rest of the movie. I don't know why he's credited as the Kurgan, because I think Ramirez is the only one ever calls him the Kurgan once in passing. Okay. But we meet Clancy Brown's character, Chris's favorite character.
I liked him a lot.
Yep. Yeah. And he kills MacLeod for the very first time in his life. Now, here's another thing I knew watching this movie that was... Now, this wasn't... You didn't need to know this necessarily watching the movie or learn this later on, but they've actually managed to explain at what point people become immortal, I think, in Highlander Endgame, the fourth movie. So basically...
It was that.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm trying just to fill in gaps for people. So why people... You know, that's kind of a lingering question I had back in the 80s and 90s, is like, if people are immortal, why do they get to a certain age? Is that when they level out? Well, the history of this goes, when you have this immortal gene or whatever it is in your body, it doesn't activate until you are violently killed. So you could live to be 89, and if you don't pass away of old age, you happen to get hit by a car, you're going to be 89 until you get your head chopped off.
Like Sean Connery.
Right.
Okay. Because in the TV,
I took the time to explain it.
Okay. In the TV show, wasn't there a kid? There was a little girl or something, maybe a kid.
Maybe they explained it in the TV show and then adapted it to us purists that only watch the movies.
That's fine and all, but that's a lot to ask of an audience to just go with.
I don't think it necessarily had anything needed even to explain in this movie. I'm just saying it to fill in that piece of information for no reason, because I ain't got a lot to say about this movie and I gotta say something.
I feel bad for you.
I know, my heart goes out to bad.
Well, that's why we do this the original concept of this show, right? Like, to see if they...
So hold up.
I mean, if it was like it was when you were younger, and if it's something that was tried and true for you, and now you're feeling like this. I mean, we were kind of making fun of it to begin with, and now I've kind of feel a little sad. Like, if you feel that way now, like that this was something that was important to you, and now you're crestfallen.
Well, not really, because I had said this before. This viewing did not do this for me. The terrible sequels really made me fall out of love with Highlander as the entire franchise. So this is just kind of, this is actually like finally closing the back cover. It's like I had that last, I'm like ready not to read the last page of a book that I didn't like, and I'm hoping that last page is just going to be better, and then you finally read it and go, nope, it's no better. So this is the last page of something that started out great and then turned awful. So this podcast has not done that to me. So don't feel too bad about it. Feel bad about the shitty sequels that came out after this.
Okay, good. Then we can go back to making
fun. Absolutely, yes.
No, so this is like closure for you.
Closure, exactly. Yep.
Now, how did when you and Christy first met, and you probably told her at some point that you were a big fan of this.
Luckily, you kept that from me.
Yeah, 2 and 3 had been already out and ruined this for me. So the Endgame had come out since we'd been married,
You didn't even make me go see it or anything.
I was just saying, I was so unenchanted with Highlander at that point. We never even saw it in theaters. This was like, we used to go, there used to be a Blockbuster at the corner strip mall in our first house. And we used to rent movies all the time. And we got to the point where we were struggling to pick something. And then that's when I ended up picking up Highlander Endgame. So it wasn't even like Endgame's out, let me finally watch it. I've seen everything else in here, I guess I'll watch Endgame situation.
Okay, so it wasn't even a thing to her that she knew that
this might have been a deal breaker.
We talked more about the TV show, I think, than anything else, because I was a fan of the first couple seasons, then that just, like the movie, that took some weird turns, and I didn't like that anymore. So
they just ran out of ideas.
Yeah, the only Highlander we'd ever actually talk about was the TV series, I'm pretty sure. I didn't actually write it in my diary, so I can't tell you, but I think
diary. So this didn't affect your marriage? Mm-mm. It wasn't like you guys got married and then like the night of the honeymoon and consummation just happened.
It was like the quickening.
Hey, Christy had her quickening like during, you were like, by the way, I love Highlander.
I kept calling her Heather and pretending we were in the Highlands of Scotland.
There could be only come.
Heather. Mm. Yeah, you kept calling me Heather with a French accent. That was weird.
I said, why are you saying it's French? That's French. It's Scotch.
Did you call
it Scottish? I fucked that up.
I'm a Highlander.
Yeah. Let's talk. You know what? Are we at? No, we're not quite at Ramirez in my notes. Let me zip through here, because we go back to we see his first death. He's left to die, and he comes back to life, and they kick him out of the village. We don't need to go through all that shit. So we go back to the present, and we meet Brenda and Frank, the oddest couple on the force.
Yes.
Of New York's finest. One of them is an old crotchety by the book cop that won't go out of his way for anything. The other one's a shiny, bright eyed startup rule breaker that will do anything to get the job done when it comes to old swords, I guess. I don't know where I'm going with this.
And other things.
That was a really like a terrible interrogation scene too, I thought.
Oh, that was
Oh, come on. You cruising for a little piece of ass, Nash? Why? Are you in the market?
That was the worst part of the movie. You just reminded me. I watched this all
time. No, that wasn't it. That wasn't it. I fucked that up terribly. That was actually better than what it was. He said, what do you say?
You can't be doing that.
You can't say that in today's world.
Yeah, that wouldn't.
You can't. Especially to a French guy.
But Matt, I want you to like read a paragraph from the script as McCloud, because that's so funny.
Oh God, maybe later. We'll see how this pans out. Okay. But I just thought of there's a note I had. Now, I had never really noted the date of the Scotland scenes. It was 1536. So McCloud's been alive for nearly 500 years, 450 years. You tell me his accent is no better than it was 5 centuries ago?
No, it doesn't get any better. No.
In fact, it might be a little worse.
It gets thicker.
Yeah.
And his fashion sense is pretty bad, too.
That interrogation was that scene was awful. And for all the compliment you did before for the lighting and the camera work and that wrestling thing,
yeah.
I swear they didn't even have a light on in that room. And you're sitting there watching it through a screen door.
Yeah.
Oh my God, was that awful?
That was awful.
That was one of the worst scenes in any movie we've reviewed.
I can't defend it.
It was fun to watch, but it was so bad.
It's just so, and you're right. Not only is it a bad interrogation scene, it's a bad, what's that word? It's a bad exposition scene. Cause it's like, all of a sudden we find out his name is Nash. That's fine. We need to know his name. We find out he's an antiques dealer, but we're finding out by the crotchety cop I'm talking about. He's like, you're an antiques dealer out on First. You know what I think happened? I think you went to make a deal and it went sour and you cut his head off. I'm like, okay, that's an interesting leap, but we did learn a lot about the character. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks, bud. It's been a while, I swear, since I watched this. Do they have the sword there?
Yes.
Do they give him the sword?
Yeah, no, they lay it down. That is actually maybe the highlight of that scene, if you can find one, because they lay it down in front of him, and he go, you know what this is? And he like looks at it for a couple seconds. A sword.
Yeah. That's great. They give the suspect a weapon.
Yeah.
That's great. I love this movie.
It was the 80s. They also smoked in there and didn't wear seatbelts.
That's true.
Yeah.
And had unprotected sex.
Babies in the front seat.
And didn't cover their outlets.
Literally.
Or inlets.
Especially that wrestler.
You watch that and watch her, that little girl's lips.
How many times you watch that scene?
I think twice.
Come on.
Four.
Well, moving out of this, the best
it right now.
Moving out of the best, clearly the best scene of the movie. We see the Kurgan again. This time, present day.
Terminator.
Terminator. You. Okay, I could see where you're going with that. Terminator with a ponytail.
Yeah,
in need of a lozenge.
Yes, yeah, a whole bag for you
and a bath.
And he buys a hotel room and he puts his sword together. And this is the first time we hear. Well, I'm sorry. This is the second time we hear the word "the gathering" because we heard it from Sean Connery in the bathroom to open the movie.
That sword would fall apart.
Yeah, that sword was like, a mess.
This sword, I will admit this. Even when I was a huge fan and loved this movie, I never understood this sword.
Yeah, what is it? It's like a Lego sword.
It's a Lego. As you swung it, it would hit the person and snap in half.
And then for no good reason whatsoever, he hits a trigger and these little 4-inch blades pop out of the sides.
But and watch it. He jumped before the blades popped out.
He like, did?
He hit the button and he like flinched and all of a sudden, thunk, they popped out. Yeah.
Oh,
I swear to God, yeah.
They probably did that take like 8 times. Like, Clancy, stop flinching.
I can't. It's scary, Clark.
But for this short scene, it does have one of the more quoted movies from this line, and I think at least one person put this on our Facebook page, and it's when the hooker comes in from behind him and says, I'm Candy, and he goes, of course you are.
Isn't that where the camera's half his face?
Yes.
Yeah, that was
there creepy. There is some interesting camera decisions in this movie.
When I asked you, I was like, ooh, who's behind me?
Yeah, he was good at being creepy. He reminded me more of the guy, the killer in Cobra. Like that.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Civilized.
Isn't it?
It all comes back to Saloon.
Yeah, he was a shapeshifter in X-Files.
Oh, Dave, who's in that movie?
In what movie?
Cobra. That's what I just said. I said it all comes back to Saloon.
Oh, okay.
That might have been a Canon Films.
That could have been.
And could be an upcoming episode of The Gradys if it continues.
Yeah, it will continue, Dave.
Stallone is like Korn. He always comes back.
Oh, that wasn't nice.
Come on, Pussycat. Be nice.
Come on, Pussycat. So let's go back in time again. 1536, rises from the dead, yada, yada, yada.
Coming back from the dead.
Yeah. Wanders the hill islands of Scotland for way too fucking long in this movie. And then we meet him later in the 1500s. He's a blacksmith at his new home with his wife Heather. And enter
Heather.
The most what's it? Oh, Heather. Heather. Yeah. Enter the next classic character, often talked about character from this movie. Juan Sanchez Villalobos. Villalobos Ramirez.
Ramirez.
Of Lobos.
It was awful. Seeing him in this role was, they were running together so worse than Rocky and Apollo.
It was when Christopher Lambert's sleeves were falling down, and he's like waving his hands like a 13-year-old girl. I'm like, what the fuck?
Remember the part where they were training or something, and Lambert, whatever his wife, yeah, laughed at him, and he turns to the camera. I don't know her name in the movie.
Heather, please.
Yes. That part, I left like 20 minutes. He's looking at her, Heather, please. Stop making fun of me.
No, he looked like he's going to cry.
That part was cracking me up.
That was the 27th take of it. It was the best one.
There's like Caddyshack and then this. This is so funny. Heather, please stop it.
So, all right, let's... Is this where we find out yet? Let's say it is, because I don't even care anymore. We find out at one point during this whole training montage, this isn't even a montage. This is like a extended montage.
When they ran down the beach, yeah!
So we find out that Sean Connery, he's got an obviously Spanish name, but he's Egyptian. This is the point in my 1986 viewing and every subsequent viewing before, what the fuck was anyone thinking in the casting of this movie? You got a French guy playing a Scotsman. You have a Scotsman playing an Egyptian with a Spanish name. This makes no sense.
No.
Never has and never will to me.
I have to say, though, Sean Connery's guyliner, perfect.
Well, what's frustrating about the whole Sean Connery thing is that, you know, the premise of Highlander and a story is written behind a Scotsman who gets killed and survives to the present day and survives to the quickening. Fine, okay, so you cast the wrong person for that. There is no reason for Ramirez to be Egyptian. They could have easily changed one word in the script and saved a lot of confusion.
Yeah, that was in the script and they had to stick to it?
I guess, because there's no reason. He's been around for, I think, thousands of years, they said at this point or something. So he could have easily have been Scottish-born and traveled the world and now have come back. And I don't think it would have been that far-fetched of a thing for the audience to take. But calling him Egyptian is a little weird.
Yeah, and it would have made more sense that's why he was there to train another Scotsman.
Yeah, like, that's actually probably a better story element now you bring it up.
Like they were brethren. Yeah, the fact that he was Egyptian, it's like maybe like Sean Connery just was like, I want to wear fancy clothes. Like there was no reason for it whatsoever. You're right. He almost looked like he did, and you know the name of this movie. What's the name of that movie where he's in the mankini?
Zardoz.
Yeah, he looked like that, which is great.
It's like what he had on top of the mankini. It's like he stripped that out of that clothes and was wearing a mankini.
I think it's the same character.
It probably is. It could be, because Zardoz is in the future, because Ramirez, you know, maybe he didn't actually die because the castle fell on him. Maybe he survived to the future.
Yeah.
I think Zardoz, Ramirez.
I think it's...
God, I hope not.
Now, a note I have here, a story note, is that the quickening attracted him to McCloud. That's what brought him from Egypt. But again, what we just came up with would have worked just as well. He could have put in the line, I've been traveling the world for centuries and I felt your presence and had to come back. Boom, done. Doesn't need to be Egyptian. What the fuck?
Boom.
Boom. Not really, no.
I want to just break in real fast. I don't know if you saw, I posted a little picture of McCloud sword.
Uh-huh.
On our Facebook page, and someone just posted Aaron. I want to say his name's Holtzclaw.
Yeah, we've known him on all our shows for a while.
He responded because I said it's happening right now. Tell people that we're recording right now as we record. Here's his comment. I feel like I've waited as long as Connor McCloud waited for the gathering.
Let's hope he's not as disappointed as Castagear was. No one? Anyone? All right, we'll get to that.
Who that is.
Okay.
That picture that you found,
yeah,
of the sword is so Braveheartish.
It is.
Yeah. But this is before Braveheart.
But right. I'm saying Mel Gibson,
okay,
is a bitch.
Hey. I agree.
He ripped this off. What do you think about that?
No, but I don't think this was thrown in the air.
Come on.
I saw it.
I'm pretty sure Scottish history is Scottish history.
Yeah. No.
Bullshit.
Mel just made it better.
No.
Because I can watch it and like it.
I'm not going to go that far.
Just one chance to come back here and tell our enemies
that's
that they may take our lives,
that's
but
right,
they never take our anti-Semitism.
I'm not laughing at that. That is the wrong accent.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom.
Man, Matt does his thing so perfectly.
Matt, you do. That's you creepy. Do.
Right, now, now we need a conversation between Christoph Lambert and David Bowie.
Hello, Christoph. Are you greasing for a piece of ass?
That's all I can think of.
Yes, actually.
And Mel Gibson comes in and says,
You make me want to smoke.
That's not funny.
Sugar tits.
Your pole, I'm going to smoke.
He's awesome. I love Mel.
Come on. I did like, we brought up Braveheart. At least the one thing I go, this movie at times was like a travel video.
Yes.
So, you know, some of the shots of Scotland, I was like, well, at least that's nice.
I think the only quote I have directly, oh, no, there's a couple, but the one I have for Ramirez down is, okay, he's Egyptian, he's Scottish, but he decides to use a Spanish curse word, but with a Scottish accent, he goes, no, burn the hole. Horrible.
That was good.
Horrible.
But he's training him. Rocky. That is probably some of the worst fight choreography I've ever seen.
I know, because they pick the worst places to do it on the boat. Okay, that was a balance exercise, but it's like there was no action whatsoever. But by far the worst one is on the edge of that cliff. Now, I can completely understand their hesitation to really take some swings because it's dangerous, but it looks like shit.
That's the one I was thinking of. Yep. It's like we're going to swing and we're going to slow down as we get to each other's swords and hold.
Yeah.
Clang.
Oh, Braveheart. Hold.
Yeah, that was maybe some of the worst. That was as bad as Chris and I sword fighting in the fan film movie.
No, you guys were moving much quicker.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Yes. So at the end of his training, when they had a little heart to heart, we learned about some drawbacks about being immortal. And I don't know why I note these. I hope I have notes on to follow up. But
your fashion sense will never be good.
He can't have children, and he'll learn the heartbreak of outliving his loved ones. I don't know if that's important in my later notes, but I wrote it down.
It's very Jedi-like.
Like I guess.
A Jedi cannot know love because she's just going to die anyway. Yeah, it's very sad.
Yeah.
I felt so bad.
So, okay, after everything is... we have a nice evening of training. I don't know if McLeod goes out on a beer run or takes a pee or something, but he's not in the house when Kurgan catches up with Ramirez.
Kurgan.
Yeah, where is he?
I don't know.
There's nowhere to go. Hey, please. It's 1500.
Heather, please.
There's no Wawa.
Heather, please.
I can watch that scene over and over again. I laughed. That was so funny.
But there's one point where he tells her to shut your mouth, woman.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So in love with her, but he was abusive.
And that was assertive.
Till the end scene. Oh.
Don't make me stick you with my sword, and I don't mean my penis.
Matt, just do the rest of it in that voice.
Yeah, do it.
Kurgan finds Ramirez in the castle, and he gets a hold of Rachel.
And Christy can
who the fuck is Rachel?
Zelda Rubinstein.
Zelda Rubinstein. Oh, her.
There can be only one.
Oh, man.
That's awesome.
Okay, I'll do all the Kurgan parts as the science as Buffalo Bill.
Yeah, I have something to say. It's better to burn out and fade away.
Okay, anyway, now, this is interesting because this is the only second time I've seen this scene. The World War II scene. Did you guys have this on the versions you saw?
World War II scene?
No.
Okay, this was originally cut from the theatrical release, and I'd only ever seen it on like the Ultimate Director's Cut VHS or something. There's a World War II scene where he saves a little girl from the Nazis, and ends up this little girl is the older woman that works with him in the antique shop. I always thought it was a lover that he had come to be friends with because she was aging, but it turns out it was kind of, well, pretty much his adopted daughter, which was a big story element that was missing from like my first 50 viewings of this movie.
No idea about any of that
stuff. Okay, so it all depends on what version of this movie you see, whether or not you find out who Rachel is. I think it's a huge piece to cut out.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't have cared at that point, probably. But, right. But that is pretty major. No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's really weird. Having been a big fan of the movie, I just always assume because it follows the Ramirez thing, and then so you kind of have fresh in your head that you're going to outlive your loved one. So I, for like years, I assumed Rachel was a lover he was about to outlive, but then all of a sudden I get this version of the movie and it's completely twist the movie for me. And then I watch it all these years later and we're in a different frame of mind.
So when did you see this for the first time?
It was a VHS copy. I don't know when. I'm going to say after 1995, but before, but probably we'll say mid 90s because it was definitely before 2000s. I forgot I had moved here. So, well, it had to be actually, it was before I took it with me to Puerto Rico. So it had to been between 92 and 95. So somewhere. So mid 90s, like I just said.
Did anyone in Puerto Rico watch this with you?
No, I don't think I watched it in Puerto Rico. I just had it with me because I couldn't leave without my 17 versions of Highlander.
You're like what's his name? Hinckley with Catcher in the Rye. Right. I'll be with you. All right, I want to know the Puerto Rican viewpoint on Highlander.
No, I don't. I'll try to find one for you. We'll follow it up. Never.
We'll follow it up and never. No, I don't know what. I have no idea what that did. So, at this point in your summary, have they had the fight in the castle that's falling apart?
They must have. I'm trying to see if we go. Do we go back? Does it cut in the middle? No, it doesn't. Okay, I thought it, the way my notes were laid out, I thought it cut in the middle. I guess I just got tired of taking notes at this point.
I know what that's like.
So, okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, they did have the fight, and, oh, yeah, I did skip over a section of notes. Sorry about that. Sorry for anyone listening, but I'm just trying to struggle through this.
Donde esta dickhead?
That's a big part of the movie, I would assume. Like
it is. It is. And I really thought it must have been broken up by my notes were. So I did skip ahead. So yeah, let's go back. So there is this fight between Ramirez and Kurgan.
That's the only part I cared about.
Really? Okay.
Because it was like at least there was some action, and I like the fact that I don't know why. I mean, it's just like shitty Scotty architecture, I guess. But it's falling apart for no reason. Yeah. At least it was going on. And then, like, it's like the fact that he's in this movie at all, and now that this is the result, it's like, it's kind of like a whole, I mean, it's like you said, it's the WTF of why he's even in this movie.
Right. But there is an important scene where Ramirez gets almost wins the fight by getting a good swipe at his throat, but he didn't take his head off.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
He just a tip, just nipped it.
Just the come here, Chris.
Come here. Eesh. So ultimately Kurgan chops off Ramirez's head in front of a giant matte painting.
Yeah. And then they like move like an inch over and build that house, and then they both look at the castle
Yeah. Well, yeah. Who wants to carry all those rocks too far away? I'm assuming you use the same rocks.
Yeah, true. Recycle.
Yeah, it's very green.
Way before its time.
Before it was cool.
So now, okay, I'm sorry. Now is where, for some reason, the World War II scene is put back in. So we already covered that. That's Rachel's origin story. She ends up being his adopted daughter. Now we have, here we go. For some reason, even though McCloud is a murder suspect, the lead investigator decides to have him over for a nice drink and dinner in her own apartment and tells him exactly where she lives. Seems smart, right?
Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute. She'll do whatever she needs to solve the case.
No, she just wants to know how old that sword is really what it comes down to.
She wants to know how old his sword is.
Whoa.
Oh, hello.
Luke's in the room.
He can't hear her. Quick, put the headphones on him.
Yeah, come here.
this scene, I watched it. This viewing is probably one of the scenes that I actually smiled at when he's like walking around and sees a cop scoping out the house, finds the tape recorder, that high tech surveillance device in that box, and like leans into it to make sure it picks up his voice when he answers her questions. I actually smiled at this scene because there wasn't a lot of smiles in his viewing for me.
That makes me sad.
Oh, well, then we go back to 1500s and Heather dies. How does that make you feel?
Excellent. I'm looking at the cast of this, and I forgot that this Kate McLeod was that Celia Imre, I think is how you say her name. And she ended up being in Star Wars. She was like that one female Naboo pilot. But she's been in lots of stuff now. She was in like that Calendar Girls and the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel thing.
But the Calendar Girls, the Kevin Kline one or a different one?
No, the one with... Oh. No, not that
Helen one. Mirren getting naked.
That one. Oh.
Where the old ladies do the calendar. Like, she's been in stuff now. She is like the young Kate McLeod there. And when I was watching that, I was like, I recognize her face. And I was like, I think that's her. And like during the movie, I did a search and I was like really proud of myself that I recognized her. That was like the only positive thing that happened during the movie.
Well, then that is one of three noted Star Wars actors in this movie then.
Yeah, I was looking at that. Go ahead.
Because now, after Heather dies, which is, you know, it hammers home the whole him being immortal and he's going to have to go through this for his whole life. So, I mean, it was emotional. No action. I can't imagine I enjoyed the scene too much my first few viewings, but maybe I did. But now we go back to the present. We're now in the time of the gathering that Sean Connery explained to us on the shitter in the beginning of the movie. everyone's coming to New York City, and McLeod meets up with his old friend Castagear, which is better known to us and listeners of Star Wars and characters, Captain Panaka.
Hiroshi.
Didn't even know that when I was watching this.
Yep.
I did not recognize him during the movie.
I wouldn't have recognized him either. Tim is the one who actually pointed that out during our Captain Panaka episode.
Oh, did he?
Yep.
So I'll listen to that show.
That show sucks. A bunch of guys giggling like schoolgirls.
Yeah, going on.
And don't know how to record audio.
Yeah, I saw that too. That was great. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'll listen.
No, I didn't know it was him, and then the other guy is like he's.
Oh, we'll get to that. Let's.
Because I blow your load.
Because I do want to talk about, because they talk about the last time they had saw each other, and this scene to me was one of the humor highlights of the movie, and I think is probably the most fun part of this movie. Still is to me entertaining. It's a glimmer of hope in an otherwise incredibly dark warehouse of shit. And that is his duel in, I don't even know where they were. Were they in England? Where he had a sword duel with someone that he ended up, he called the dude's wife like some kind of pig in a dress or something. And he kept killing McLeod over and over again. And he kept getting back up. That I thought was kind of entertaining.
Oh, yeah. That's funny.
Especially when he's warming up with the sword and he whips it and his wig turns around and he's like, Christ, I've gone blind.
There's that accent again.
All you have to do is a really weak impression of Ren from Ren and Stimpy and you got Christopher Lambert.
Christy, does he do that in the bedroom?
That's a yes.
There are different voices for every mood.
Really?
Ooh. Not really.
No, not really.
There's one mood. Christopher Lambert.
Yep.
It's all Lambert all the time.
I'm cruising Lambert. For a piece of ass.
All Lambert all the time.
And she talks like Connery.
And you sword fight.
And you move furniture. Right?
We move furniture.
You look like a peacock, you giant haggis.
I forgot. This is half of my fantasy moving team.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Would your fantasy be ruined if Sean Connery showed up and his moving partner was Christopher Lambert?
Oh, yes. Oh,
yeah, I was going to say that to me.
No, he'd just be like, I can't move this.
I can't see. I'm blind as fuck. Like the Devilman twins. I know what the opener is now. That made this episode worth recording, finally. There's finally something worth hearing in this episode.
Did you guys watch this together?
Yes.
What is she saying the whole time?
Nothing.
I am looking at him going, what the fuck are you making me watch this for?
She's on her iPad and phone probably the whole time.
Is that what you're doing? You're candy crushing and stuff?
Candy crushing.
I can proudly say I've never candy crushed. And I just wrote notes on a piece of paper. That's all I did.
You took notes?
I took notes.
On the movie?
I said the theme of this movie is eyes.
Eyes?
Yes, because I want to see in the credits who has the special lights for Christopher Lambert's eyes. Like,
they were nice.
Eye wrangler.
No, but there's always just like that one light right around his eyes. Like, yeah. Da-da-da!
That was an 80s thing. That one streak of light right across the eyes.
Awful.
Luna always had that going on.
What else is in your notes?
There's
Morticia Adams for some reason. I don't know what.
There's one scene where Clancy Brown has dirty feet, and I said HD and new Brit and Blu-ray are not his friend.
HD. What else?
Let's talk about, you know, let's take a break from the craptastic story of this movie and talk about how piss poor this Blu-ray transfer is.
Oh, it's awful.
It's horrible.
I told you, like watching it through a screen door.
Yeah, it's like there's very few scenes that actually benefit from being Blu-ray. Otherwise, it's detrimental to the viewing of this movie.
It's good. On demand, had a good quality version of it.
Really?
Oh, man. Not the HD disc, man. Oh, it's too much.
It's brutal.
Yep.
It's painful to watch.
No one's talking about my favorite part yet.
What's that?
Clancy and the church.
Oh, we haven't gotten there. We're getting there soon. Because let's get to, because it's the last Star Wars connection. We go from the duel scene in ancient England or where the hell they are. And we're in the present day, and Castagir and Kurgan are fighting in the alley. And there's a street vigilante that comes across the fight.
Yes!
Now, did you recognize who this was?
He did look familiar. Who was that?
That is Zev Seneska.
Mm-hmm.
It looks familiar, but I didn't care to look into it.
I don't know what the actor's... What was the actor's name? Because we covered him, too.
Malcolm... crap.
In the middle.
What is his name? Malcolm...
Elliot Dixon?
He just died. Yeah. He was a horror. We did a whole thing on him. I'll look it up.
Yeah, I'm looking real quick. Well, really not that quick. It was Christopher Malcolm.
Christopher Malcolm.
So you got, yeah, the Malcolm. So yeah, Christopher, our third Star Wars connection that we know about.
He's Kirk Mantonus.
That part was hysterical.
Yes. Yep.
He had like the crew cut going on. He didn't really. I mean, like he didn't look necessarily like he would have in other things.
No.
He looked like if movies were real world, it looked like he would have tried out to be on the Predator team and got kicked off, so he became a vigilante.
Because yeah. He 40 pounds, you know. Yeah. He was like Michael Biehn, and he was Terminator. I told you.
You have to mention Michael Biehn. There isn't a single
me episode. And Biehn peed side by side. So I can talk about it.
But you don't mention Michael Biehn and his
as Michael Biehn. Yeah, Biehn.
Michael Biehn. I love that.
Has Michael Biehn peed next to you, Dave?
No.
All right.
But Sean Connery was in there doing the.
I think I've seen interlude. Michael Biehn pee, and I've smelled.
Tom Pollock.
Tom Pollock shit.
Tom Pollock's crap.
What about me?
That's right.
Did it smell like haggis?
So, next set of notes I have might only be interesting to me. It's about when Brenda starts uncovering Nash's past. She uses some of her friends in the computer department, and I have a note how unrealistic the signature matching is on this computer.
That's funny, yeah.
Okay, so it didn't just stand out to me because it's what I do. You guys noticed how too convenient it was.
Yes, it was so hysterically like who thought of that program?
Right.
To do that
in the movie. Awful. So McCloud lights a Heather. Okay, here we go.
Here we go.
McCloud is he promised Heather on her death. I was gonna say bed, but it was grass, I guess, the death grass, that he'd light a candle on her birthday for every year to come. So he goes to the local or the closest church and lights a candle, and here comes Kurgan.
One of the best parts of the movie was how filthy he was when he walked in that church. And the part that just I was cracking up at is when the nuns walked past him and he stuck out his tongue.
Nah.
Hysterical.
Nuns, no sense of humor.
Yeah, you don't do that to anybody, but come on, a nun? Come on.
you don't do that on Sundays after communion?
When I go up there and I get it.
After you take your shot of wine and go, woo! La, 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 la.
But that part cracked me up. He's my favorite part of the movie. He really was.
He's good. He's good in this. He's the only one I think that tries.
Yeah, agreed.
But he disguises himself. The most.
Yeah. He shaves his head.
Always, yeah. Shaves his head. Puts safety pins in his scar.
But did he miss a big piece of his hair?
Yes, he did. It was like a
ponytail or
yeah, I want to say rat tail, but that's not it. It's like just he left this piece in the back, like a Hare Krishna, yeah. Like a punk rock Hare Krishna. And now this is the most quoted line, apart from "There can be only one," and it's the and I said it before. I have something to say. It's better to burn out and fade away. And it was completely improv by Clancy Brown. This was not in the script.
Kudos for him.
So, that's not, he didn't come up with that. Isn't that a James Dean quote?
Well, I mean, okay, yeah, I don't know. He's probably quoting something, but for him to say that was not in the script. Okay. In the script is what isn't the point I'm trying to make.
So he's been all throughout history, and he was probably, maybe James Dean was a Highlander dude, and he cut his head off, and that's the explanation for his death.
That's probably
deeper
true.
Than this movie, Dave.
I like it. That and he also killed Natalie Wood while he was at it. It wasn't the guy from Austin Powers.
Robert Wagner?
Yeah, isn't that the guy that they think would put was there when she jumped off the boat?
Christopher Walken?
Christopher Walken.
I thought it was
Christopher. I don't know who it was. Yeah.
They were both on the boat.
Okay. Maybe Natalie Wood's a Highlander.
I think Natalie Wood is.
Was.
Or.
Is.
She's been quickened.
I'm looking at this director. Are you going to talk about this director at all and his other quote, his other things he's done?
We can at the end, I guess.
Sorry, I was just looking at that.
That's Dave's way of saying to get to the.
I'm almost at the end here. So Nash invites Brenda over to his house, and we do another star. I think we have an impressive crane shot of his trophy room.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of neat, but has nothing to do with anything. But so he reveals himself as immortal. He says, "I am Connor McLeod of the Clan McLeod, born in 19 blah blah blah, or 815 blah blah blah. I cannot die." Stabs himself, and what's the first thing you do once you kill yourself in front of a woman? You bang. Now there's something interesting in a sex scene you don't see often.
I saw his backside.
Oh no, he actually was. He had his mouth on her nipples at one point in our version.
Biting.
Yeah, I was like, wow, you don't never see that. And even a rated, regardless of its rating, you don't see that in a movie much. Not a movie that you see in theaters, theaters that we would go to.
Chris and I have seen all kinds of movies.
Let's say Fred Willard might have seen that in movie theaters he goes to.
Henry and June.
Well, that was NC-17. This was R.
Right, you're right, you're right.
Chris, that's not your favorite part?
No.
You like that better?
The whole part of the nun, yeah.
You are growing up.
Oh, he's getting so mature.
Man, I put a pause in my notes to just let Chris talk at this point, so now I got nothing. What the hell are we going to do for the next 10 minutes?
Well, hear me out. I will tell you this, all right? Luke likes to watch everything with me.
Oh, okay.
And I remember you saying there was that one scene of biting the thingamajiggy.
Yeah, because he's here now. He's here. Yeah.
And the whole time I'm watching this movie, like nothing's happening. I'm like, oh, he could have saw this. He could have saw heads getting cut off. He sees Walking Dead. Come on, this is nothing. And then there's like, oh, there it is.
There it is.
And then I rewinded and watched it again. Snap out of the room. Yeah, he was down here and I was up there in the bedroom alone.
Oh, you're all comfy.
Why do you think I was laying down in bed? God. But yeah, so it was all right. It was dark. I couldn't really see much.
And you were really crying.
And I always do this. Whenever I see an item on a woman that's not wearing any clothes.
You could have just said thingamajiggy again.
Thingamajiggy. I look and see if it's really her. If it's really the actress or if it's like a stunt boob.
Yeah. I don't know. Was it a stunt boob?
It was dark. I don't know. Like, it didn't show her. Because the next scene, she's on the stairs. She doesn't look as hot as she did in that bed.
Maybe.
Could have been
stand in.
Stunt boobs.
Stuntcock.
SB.
What's that?
Stunt boob.
Stunt boob. SN.
So stunt. After their lovely night of death and lovemaking.
Crap.
McLeod leaves and Rachel. Oh, wait. McLeod leaves. What the fuck? My notes are all over the place. Hold on here. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So after that, Kurgan is kidnapped, or Jesus Christ, Brenda is kidnapped by Kurgan. So we're into the final, we're ramping up to the final showdown. McCloud gets all his shit together, hands it off to Rachel, which we now know is his daughter, and goes off to face Kerrigan. So now we get to, unless you really want to talk about Clancy Brown screaming and listening to Freddie Mercury sing New York, New York for 20 minutes, we can go to the fight.
That was funny, but no.
It was funny, but it was too long.
Maybe yes. Christy does.
Yeah.
Just because I like Queen does not mean I like all Queen.
Are we going to talk about the music when you're done?
Sure.
Okay.
If we have to.
Oh, my God.
It's so... All right, the fight. My memories of this are so different than what I watched the other night.
It actually did look like our fight at the movie theater.
Yeah, it did, didn't it?
Letters. And you know what, Matt? That's probably why you had us do that.
It probably was. I don't. It was that was subconscious because I didn't actively decide to do that. But you're probably right.
Yeah, there was what it was a hotel. I don't know the name of the hotel now. Top of my head. But there was all letters and all, and they were fighting in front of them. They were all falling one. Yeah,
falling into the water and electrocution and stuff and
awful.
Then they fall through the glass into the warehouse and they fight, and there's some decent camera work there, but that's about all there is.
They would have broken the whole every bone in their body. Yeah. During that.
Connor defeats Kerrigan. Any comments about Kerrigan's head, how lousy that looked?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what happened after the light came out and there was the cartoon drawings?
Yep, that's my next notes. Final quickening, all the immortals that Kerrigan killed is going into Connor McCloud now, and Connor gets lifted up in the air, and for some reason they decided to draw lightning around the cables that were lifting him. Why didn't they just draw animated arrows pointing at the cables so that we wouldn't miss them? Because that's effectively what they did by doing that.
You know what those drawings look like, which you guys, we did this on the Grady's. What was that movie? One Crazy Summer?
Yes. Oh, no. Better Off Dead.
That's it. It looked like those cartoon drawings.
They were terrible. What I was reading in the little bit of research, post-research I did, that those were drawn in to try to cover the wires, but all they really did was point them out. So it's like, it was a quick supposed fix. It was like, I don't know what do you call an addition after post-production, like post-production. This was after the screening of the final edit. They're like, ooh, those, you can kind of see the wires, we should cover them up. And then they ended up, like I said, they should have just drawn arrows pointing at the wires at this point.
Did a good job, because I didn't even think to look for the wires.
You didn't see the wires? Maybe it worked then. Okay.
Because I was too busy looking at what is going on. Why are they drawing?
It was because it was done so fast. It was a very quick supposed fix. So all right. It wasn't. I mean, yeah, because you're exactly right. Jedi was out 3 years before this, and that lightning from the Emperor's fingers is way better. They should have been doing better, but it was a quick fix.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
It was because of the little amount of time they put into it.
Yeah, okay. I'll give you that.
So Connor's got the prize. He knows everything. Goes back to Scotland. And now, for some reason, he can grow old and have children. And we don't need to have a sequel. But for some reason, we have three and a TV series. And no, we have actually, I'm sorry, we have four sequels. Because then there's a sequel to the TV series. And then the Raven TV series. And a bunch of other shit. And comic books and books and cartoons and crap and shit. And God, I don't ever want to see this again.
Can you explain to me, like, beyond, like, if Sean Connery's head got cut off in this one, what's his story in part two?
Okay. In part two, we learn that they are actually from the planet Zeist. And there are aliens who are excommunicated to the planet Earth. But before they're excommunicated, for some reason, Sean Connery and Christopher Lambert's alien characters sneak away and are able to dip their hands in the solution called the quickening and bind themselves together so that if they are ever separated by death, one can call the other one's name at a time of peril and bring him back to life. And that's how he's brought back to life in Highlander 2.
Did you read that or do you just know
that? No, I know that.
Oh my God!
But then, with the disaster of Highlander 2, it's now called a reimagining of the characters, and Highlander 3 is actually Highlander 2, which has no Ramirez.
What? Oh.
Yes.
What are you laughing at? I walked away from
Okay.
He went to the bathroom for a moment.
I don't blame you.
And I came back and you're like, Highlander 2 doesn't exist, and now Highlander 3 is Highlander 2.
Yeah.
And he goes, what?
This is great. Are we going to do these other ones? Can we do the whole thing?
Well, there were Highlander 2 is in 1991, so it doesn't count.
Come on. Why'd they wait so long?
Coming soon, the 90s.
All right. Before we get into our scores, what do you want to talk about first? The music or the director? Who's still working today by some fucking miracle?
Well, I know either. Christy is a huge Queen fan, right?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm most interested to hear her thoughts.
I love this soundtrack, except for one song. I love this soundtrack. In fact, I didn't know that. I think the first time I really heard it, I mean, I was a big Queen fan anyway. But then when I saw the TV show and they used the Highlander, like the Princes of the Universe as the theme song.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I must find it. And then you couldn't. For some reason, I couldn't find a Highlander soundtrack. And then I found out that it was on...
It's a Kind of Magic.
It's a Kind of Magic.
Album, yeah.
It's on their album, and it says nothing about the Highlander on the front. It just says it on the back, on the tracks. So I got it, and I played it a lot in college, except for that one song. And it was so funny because, you know when you get married to someone...
We all know how that is. Yes.
And you go through, at some point there will be a joining of the resources. So the CDs will
joining of the resources.
Joining of the resources, like movies and CDs and tapes. And I just remember when I was putting the CDs away at some point, I think it was when we moved, I started to put all the pairs together. And that was one of our pairs.
Aww.
That we both had It's a Kind of Magic and Flood.
Aww.
And the Forrest Gump soundtrack.
Aww.
And that was it.
Flood.
Now, Queen's credited with the soundtrack of this movie, but there's not that many songs featured. There's the first one, Princess of the Universe. There is Kurgan's theme, which is Give Me the Prize. There's Don't Lose Your Head. And It's a Kind of Magic. And
Just One Year of Love.
Just One Year of Love. That's the only ones I can think of. That's five songs. I guess that's a soundtrack because there's no other artist, but not as many as you would think when they say Queen is the soundtrack of this entire movie.
What's the song you hate?
One Year of Love.
One Year of Love.
Why do you hate that so much?
Oh, it's whiny.
It's always the rain today without you.
I'm a prisoner of love. Inside you.
That was Louis Anderson singing that. I mean,
I know where's the pudding.
But the other ones you like?
Yes, I like the other ones.
Okay.
I like hard rock. I like it when they rock out. That sounded so white. I'm sorry.
White
I like
and it, 50.
I like it when they rock out.
When they play rock and or roll.
More when they roll.
Well, Dave, you had brought it up originally. What, is there something you wanted to say about it?
I was mostly interested in Christy.
Okay.
I like the songs, and I like Queen not nearly as much as she does. I mean, I think they're okay. But that first song is really great. That one that I guess you said they even use it on the TV show. That what is it called? Princess of the Universe or whatever?
Yep.
That's a great song. It's like a good 80s Queen song. And when did Flash Gordon come out as compared to this? It had to be earlier, right?
I think it is earlier. I'm going to find out.
They're very similar. And I remember being younger and listening.
80. Yeah, 6 years earlier.
Oh, wow. It was a lot earlier. Yeah. I remember listening to the Flash Gordon songs as a kid and thinking they were cool. And it was like, this kind of reminded me of that. So, it's good for them. I mean, I wonder if this is the kind of stuff they're making this Freddie Mercury movie now, right?
Oh yeah, that's right.
Sacha Baron Cohen was going to be him, but he dropped out. He'd be the guy from Skyfall that played Q.
Yeah, for real.
I think he's going to be Freddie Mercury now.
Okay.
I'm wondering if this will be included. So I don't know.
Maybe
they'll get Christopher Lambert.
Oh, jeez, I hope so.
De-age him with like the
X-Men CGI.
Professor X, thing.
Or make it even creepier, like Kurt Russell and Tron.
Yeah, that was creepy.
You mean Jeff Bridges?
Jeff Bridges. I've done that. for fucking 30 years, I've gotten those two confused.
I knew what he meant.
Good. I was like, was he a Tron?
No, okay. I've done that. I've always gotten those two mixed up and always will.
The songs are good, I think, in general, especially that first one. The other ones I could take or leave, but I was just mostly interested in.
Okay.
Because this is the kind of thing where, like, if she doesn't like this movie and this is, like, one of her favorite bands, like, one thing could affect the other.
Hmm.
No.
All right.
Well, what about Russell? I don't even know how to say it. I meant to look up the pronunciation of his name, but honestly, when I was done this movie, I no longer cared, so I just winged it when we did the intro. Russell
Mulcahy?
Like, yeah. Father Mulcahy?
That's the way I'm saying it. Like, okay. Francis Mulcahy from MASH.
All right. What about his body of work?
I'm looking at it now, and it's weird. It's like weird because he's a very prolific music video director.
But what's strange is that it seems to have come post some of his movie work, which is usually the reverse for video directors.
Yeah, you're exactly right. He did a bunch of videos, then did some movies, went back to videos.
Yeah.
He did videos for The Tubes, the Queen videos, Duran Duran.
Which one? The Human League.
That's great. Billy Joel. He did a million Billy Joel videos. Let's see. Duran Duran. He did Hungry Like the Wolf.
Yes. The James Bond one.
No, that was Living the Day.
No, but that ad reminded me
of Adam. Oh, I got you. Okay.
Yeah.
For Billy Joel, he did Pressure, Allentown, A Matter of Trust. He this might be his original claim to fame. The first video played on MTV was the Buggles video Killed the Radio Star. He directed it.
Wow.
I'm looking at his list here. I mean, this guy's like all over the place. He did an AC/DC thing.
Yep.
But in between, he did movies. One of my favorite action movies from the 90s. And Chris, I know you love this movie too.
Yeah.
He directed Ricochet.
Denzel?
Yeah. That's a great movie.
That is a cool movie.
Head in the Shadow.
Yeah. That,
wow.
And now he's doing, I guess, these Resident Evil movies. I don't know.
Resident Evil? And he's doing the Teen Wolf series now.
The Teen Wolf.
Oh, thing. My God. I watched that shit.
You feel bad about yourself?
Yeah. That explains why the show's not that good.
His career is all over the place. He went from within 2 years, he directed the Dale Earnhardt story.
Oh, good.
Oh, geez.
After he died, and a Culture Club video.
Which one?
You go where the money is.
Something I never heard of.
Oh, well, right. Not with those two examples, you don't.
No, yeah. This guy's directed 4 episodes of Queer as Folk. This guy has had some career. He's kind of all over the place. And the Ricochet thing really threw me for a loop because that's a great movie.
It is a good movie.
He directed, now Matt, you would know this. He directed Lambert and something else here.
Oh, God, really?
I'm looking for it here. I just saw it. Resurrection.
Resurrection. I don't even know that one.
This may be a straight to
that's Highlander 6
DVD kind of thing. The only reason I wanted to bring him up is because of like what you were just saying, like the music video thing back and forth between movies is kind of strange.
Yeah, yeah. Usually you just upgrade. Like you stop doing music videos, you go back to doing films.
Exactly.
I did watch the director's commentary on one of the, not for this viewing, but way back when I was really into the movie. And I do recall him saying when he was working with the writers on how to do this movie, that one of their biggest storytelling goal, one of the things they were trying to do with the script was tell a time travel movie without a time travel kind of device, just making it organic and natural. And I, despite the really terrible things about this movie, I think that is something that they did successfully do, because we have talked about them jumping back and forth and it not being confusing. So I think at the least they succeeded in that. Or not.
Nah. Yeah, I can see what you're saying. It makes sense a little bit.
You just want this over with.
No, the time traveling part of it wasn't
there was
the
no
problem.
DeLorean, no Bill and Ted's phone booth. No
right.
Stewie chain or anything.
The time traveling part was, I thought, handled well. I give him that. This is just everything else.
I know. That's all.
Mainly the acting. This guy
is awful.
I mean, I know you liked him, and now it sounds like you're second. Like, I'd see this guy for the first time. He's possibly one of the worst actors I've ever seen at anything.
I liked him so much that if it wasn't for Highlander 2, 3, 4, and 5 ruining him for me, I'd still be running to the theater to see Ghost Rider 2, having not seen the original Ghost Rider because he was in it, but he's been long ruined for me since then.
Oh, he's brutal.
Yeah.
It's awful. It's awful.
And I got a bone to pick with you, too.
Heather, please.
Because we're going to do a list. And I have a feeling of somebody that's going to be on your list. And if he is on your list, I'm Skyping out of here. But this guy is way worse than this other guy that you hate. As far as his lack of emotion.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
And if you're making fun of this
other guy. I know who you're talking about.
If you're making fun of this other guy for years.
Yes.
You got no right based on Lambert.
Yes. And you're right. This guy is going to be number one
on God.
This. I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah, well, get over it.
That's all I used to say. Get over it.
Yep. Now, talk about not only weird casting and character casting, but Christopher Lambert has, I'm trying to find it. I can't remember. Oh, here it is. He's got profound myopia, which is his eyes are so bad. Even when he wears glasses, the condition, his eyes still won't focus because that's part of the condition. So he's always blind, even with corrective lenses. They're putting a sword in this guy's hand.
That's why those fight scenes were so bad.
Like maybe, yeah.
Thing and stuff. Sean Connery's like, you're not letting him near me.
Right, yeah, exactly.
A little higher.
So this is just bad casting all around. But in defense of my list, I've never put Christopher Lambert on a list of anything good, so.
All right.
It's coming, Dave.
Let's get to our scores.
Storm's coming, Annie.
All right. So on a scale of 1 to 5, let's go around the table and judge or rate this movie from our first viewing as opposed to our most recent viewing, which I think I'm the only one that's going to be able to do that in this episode, aren't I?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's start with Christy like we did. We'll go in the ladies first. I don't know what the fuck I'm saying. Just get this over with.
Okay. I probably gave it about a 3 when I saw it the first time. I gave it a 1.
You sound like the Kool-Aid guy.
All right, Dave, what's your score?
Man,
never saw this before. What the lowest review grade so far has been a 0.25, or did Christy go lower with something?
I went negative, but you guys discounted that.
Went negative. Really?
I forget that one.
It may have been DC Cab.
Whoa! I'm going to go 0.5, I think.
Okay.
Just because I think that should probably be the smallest increment. Like, you can get 3.5 stars for something. So I'm just going to say this gets a half. There's almost nothing I could say about it that was good other than the tourism. So there you go.
All right. Let's get this over with. Chris, go ahead.
0.
Okay. That's it.
That's it.
All right.
0.
It was awful. It was it's mostly his. I did like Clancy Brown, but it's not enough. It's just so bad and boring and stupid and gay and lazy and stupid and boring.
You can't give Clancy Brown a half star.
No, I can't.
Okay.
I actually feel better that Tron rated higher, actually, to be honest with you.
Tron was great.
Tron was better than this. Tron was better than Highlander.
All right.
Well, obviously, from the opening of this show, and as we discussed, this was a 5 when I first watched it. It is at best, a 1 now. And the sad part is that has nothing to do with this movie. It's only because it was such a large part of my life. And it's a lot of information that I can now make fun of, as I did in this episode. So there is a use for it for me. And that's where the 1 comes from. It has absolutely nothing to do with enjoying this movie.
It's sad to hear you, like, from 5 to 1, and it's not even for the movies. It's just a little bit sad for you, man.
Well, I mean, but it's, you know, people do change and tastes change, and I guess I was just a different interest then. So, you know, I don't know. I can't explain what I don't like about, or I can't explain why such a drastic change. I can just tell you why I don't like it now. That's all I can tell you. And I think I was pretty thorough in explaining why I didn't like it this time around.
Did you ever buy like the actual McCloud sword?
No, I don't. Yeah. I mean, as much as I love this movie, I also love, you know, Star Wars and Star Trek just as much. And I don't do it with those movies either. I'm not that kind of fan. You know that. You've seen my house. There's barely a trace of any of the things I love apart from, you know, my direct hobbies. So that, right. I'm just not that kind of a collector. Nothing. Not saying it's bad or good. That's just not me.
Okay.
But there is a whole Muppet room.
That's not me.
Yeah.
That's someone else's stuff.
That is me.
I'm sorry, Matt.
That's all right. No, I knew that coming into this. I mean, I knew it was going to be, I knew my opinion was going to change. I honestly didn't know it was going to change this much. And I don't feel bad for it. So don't feel bad for me.
I thought you just wanted to do this and get it over with and move.
I honestly thought my opinion was going to be a lot more positive. I really did. I thought it was going to be one of those me against the world episodes and we're going to have fun with it, but I can't defend much of this movie at all. And even when I do, the voice in the back of my head is saying, are you fucking serious?
This is the worst reviewed movie we've ever done.
It is. And that's too bad because we have talked about this for like,
yeah,
it's come up like every third episode. And it's a promise I've always made to the people that do listen to the show that we're going to do it. And I feel worse for what they're listening to me say than I feel about this movie. I do feel like I should have put on a show for them and be positive, but we've never done that. And I don't think I could, because if I was going to host this and be, you know, make shit up, but this would have went nowhere. So that's my honest opinion. I am sorry that I'm sure I let people believe that this was going to be something I was going to revere and it was going to be a big personal tribute to it. I do apologize for kind of building up to that and not delivering, but I couldn't do it. I just did not enjoy this.
Agreed. That could have been the whole podcast. You're saying that, amigo. Agreed. That's all. All right, what's top five time?
Yep, with that out of the way, we'll go into our top five list. Top five list was based on a subject we discussed early on in this, and that is the what the fuck were they thinking casting. Top five, what the fucks. And it could be, I helped Christy explain what we're doing, and it could be at any point. It could be when you heard about the casting. It could be while you're watching the movie, or it could be at any point. What the fuck was with that casting? And that's based after the Sean Connery and Christopher Lambert casting in this movie.
Beautiful.
So, should we go around the same way we went around the room for the reviews?
Sounds good.
All right, Christy, why don't you start us off with your top five what the fuck in castings?
All right, my number five would be something that I remember raised a huge stink in the geeky Wiccan girl community, I guess. Just Tom Cruise as Lestat in Interview with a Vampire.
See, this is going to be hard for me to sit and hear all these.
Awful. That was awful.
Everything I saw, I'm like, I can't write that down. I like that movie. I can't write that. I like that movie. Everything I saw, I was like, no, I ain't doing that.
Yeah, that's that goes down in history as like one of the biggest outrages before it ever happened.
Yeah, you're right.
Yep. Yeah.
Number four, Val Kilmer as Batman.
Okay.
I did not care for him.
You're back on board.
I can see that.
My number three would be Keanu Reeves as Harker in Dracula.
I saw a list online that there was like 15 or 20 movies and there was all his characters.
Oh yeah.
Like Buddha and the one you just, and they all kind of crap.
Oh yeah. There. I mean, he's down for, what was it? Day the Earth Stood Still and Constantine and all those other ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the big one for me, cause Dracula was huge when it came, like when I think it was in college, when it came out, and I was everybody was into it and everybody was so excited. Oh my God, it's going to be awesome. Gary Oldman. Oh my God. And then there was Keanu. My number two is Hayden Christensen as Anakin Skywalker.
That's awesome.
I saw that.
Freaking awful.
Why?
Freaking awful.
Really,
Really?
Not compared. Yeah, I didn't mind.
Okay.
I could write that down.
Yeah. And my number one will not be a surprise to any of you because you know my opinion about this person.
Oh shit. It's coming, Dave.
Somebody who couldn't keep a damn accent through the whole fucking movie.
Christopher Lambert in Highlander.
Kevin Costner as Robin Hood.
No!
That's why I couldn't write that down.
Throwing it down.
No, you're saying it wrong. It's no. Like, I now we take it back.
And to the left.
I knew it. Dangerous left.
I'm not taking it back or to the left. I'm sorry. But that was an awful, awful movie.
I'm going.
I love you.
Oh, my God.
All right, Dave, good.
I think they're making love.
Yeah, right now.
Come on. Come on.
I know.
Great movie, man.
I love the movie.
Great.
One of the best.
Everything I do.
Oh, the song's great, too.
Look into my eyes.
I will, man.
Now you're making fun of Bryan Adams. Really, like, you're like upset with Costner. It like transfers over to Bryan Adams.
We can even make fun of the inaccuracies in the history when she throws something through a glass mirror. There was no glass mirrors. It would have been polished metal.
Oh, my God.
You're one of those? Oh, come on.
You're one of those.
I am now.
That movie. That is such a good movie.
Great toy line, too.
Yeah.
Ewok Village.
Yum nub.
All right. Mine's a combination of things that I thought were
sucky.
Well, I'll explain it as I go.
Okay.
My number five is actually a movie that hasn't come out yet. But Chris told me about this, and when he told me about it, and this, see, now I feel really bad because I'm going to come off supporting Christy in a way, and I'm very upset with her right now. So Chris told me about this. Chris is always like on Movie Web. Did you hear this?
I go on other sites too.
Movie Web.
And I listen politely. And I go, okay.
Is James Earl Jones coming back in Star Wars 7? Click. Maybe. Oh, that's a good fucking article.
So he told me this casting weeks and months ago, and at this point I was already like, that's not happening. Okay, you got to stop reading these sites. He told me,
is it true? That is what?
Yeah, it's true.
Is it true?
He told me that Harrison Ford is going to be in the Expendables 3.
Oh yeah, I heard that too.
I'm like, that's not going to happen.
Is he like a helicopter pilot or something in it?
Yeah. Like, it's Harrison Ford. Yeah. Okay. And as much as I love Stallone, these Expendables movies suck.
But they only hired him because he fired Bruce. Stallone fired Bruce and hired Harrison.
I don't care why it happened.
They're greedy and lazy.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay, Harrison Ford does not belong in the Expendables. Okay?
Try the local sewer.
The Expendables movies, as much as I love Stallone.
Maybe Christopher Lambert will be in the fourth one.
Ooh.
I totally see that.
He'd be a swordsman. That would be awesome.
These movies are very...
You're going to go see part three?
I'll see it.
Okay, but you better see it.
These movies, to me, are at best mediocre, and which is coming down on Christy's side.
It's the 80s, what we want.
Yeah, but they're all old men, and I don't want to see them now.
I do.
I want them to go away. And I was like, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. And I saw the first trailer, and there they all are.
Walking?
You got a bunch of young guys. Some guys I don't even know.
Me neither.
Mel Gibson looking like shit.
Take that back.
And then it says,
all roided up.
And Harrison Ford, and I'm like, son of a bitch. It was right.
Part-time.
So, that's my number five. That's my WTF. What the hell is Harrison Ford doing in that movie?
This is his comeback.
No!
This is a comeback.
Money's money.
That's my number five. My number four is an actor that I hate more than anyone else.
Surely my Michael J. Fox there.
And to me, he doesn't pull these movies off. I know they're insanely popular. There was three of them and a fourth one without him. But Matt Damon kicked anyone's ass. And as him as Jason Bourne, I think is the like when I was like, what is he doing? You know, like, okay. This is awful. They even made a joke about it in the 40-year-old Virgin.
Couldn't write that down.
What, Matt Damon?
Yeah.
Come on. He's awful.
I like his movies. I like Matt Damon.
I like Matt Damon when he's, like, doing math, you know? Not when he's beating somebody up.
I like Matt Damon.
Okay, that's my number four. My number three ended up turning out great, but it, like Christy was kind of saying, at the time, it was like a head-scratcher. Before 1993, Tom Hanks had done things that were... maybe a little bit dramatic. He was in like Nothing in Common and Punchline had some dramatic parts, but the same year he made Sleepless in Seattle, the kind of movies he had been making. But in 1993, he was in Philadelphia, and people were kind of like, "This Tom Hanks, you know, he dressed up like a woman," and he totally pulled it off, and it changed his career forever. So, but at the time, that was a kind of like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah, you're right. That's a good one. I didn't even think of that. Yeah.
So it turned out well for him, but it was weird at the time. My number two is along the same lines. It also turned out to be very good. But at the time, it was like really, really bizarre. And it's Rodney Dangerfield in Natural Born
Killers. Oh, shit. That's great. Yeah. He's one of the best parts of that movie.
He is so
shit
sadistic and awful. And and he had, to my knowledge, not done anything serious. And to go in that direction, hey, Oliver Stone deserves some credit, too. I mean, that was great casting. And who would have ever thought?
Yeah.
And I remember seeing him like, oh, this Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah. So what an asshole.
Yeah, really.
That's a good one, dude. This is fantastic.
My number one, I only have it down because I love this guy more than almost any actor, and I know Chris does too. And to me, this is a WTF casting because it ruined his career. And up until then, he had, you know, been in some amazing things, and it was starting to wane his career a little bit, but this to me was the nail in the coffin. It was a bad idea, and he never recovered from it. And it's Chevy Chase as Nick Holloway in Memoirs of an Invisible Man. It was brutal and it was awful, and to me it ruined his career and he was never the same. And I love Chevy Chase more than almost anybody. In fact, in my high school football program, which I found the other day, they interviewed us all, and it's like, person you'd most like to meet, I have Chevy Chase.
Oh,
as a senior in high school.
That's awesome,
man. And in 1992, I think, his career was over.
Yeah. I would rather watch Nothing But Trouble than that movie.
That was like right before that. So he was kind of on the way down. Yeah. That was just like, see ya, buddy.
Was this talk show at the same time?
Oh, God, I forgot about that that train wreck.
He sent out, you could like send away for tickets to his talk show. I actually was like, I watched his talk show.
Yeah, so
it was awful.
It was awful.
And I sent away, you get free tickets to Chevy Chase show. And
you would love that.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't going to go. I mean, it was in California. But I just wanted to have him.
Yeah, right. I would do that if they still liked them.
Awful.
That was a great list.
Dave, that list was fantastic.
That was.
Well, now I'm curious to hear Chris's, because and hear the apology that follows up everyone on the list that he's going to give.
My list is completely different from any one of yours, because like I said, everything I saw... What's America? Everything I saw, I couldn't write it down. Costner, Jake Lloyd, Hayden... I like that stuff. So my list is stuff that these actors were offered the role.
Oh, God.
What the fuck, if they took the part, it would be totally a different movie.
Okay.
So you made your own list, basically.
I took yours, and I stretched it out.
And did you expanded it.
Yes, there you go.
So I thought of what the fuck, and these are the top five women I want to fuck.
Oh my God! I wish I would have
written that. I took one word out of the list, out of the subject.
Well, let's just say this: what if? What the fuck if? Hey, there you go. I'm gonna use that. What the fuck if John?
WTFI?
No, number five. John Candy was offered the role as Rick Moranis in Ghostbusters.
It would have been awesome.
Do you think so? I think Moranis played that dorky character perfectly. I can't see Candy doing that character.
He did it in Vacation.
Oh, yeah.
He did, actually.
John Candy was one of the most talented people to ever live.
And die.
And it's sad. And we will. Every time I watch his movies, I get freaking sad.
You're right?
Yeah.
Right. Number four. What if it was Robin Williams smashing down the door in The Shining and not Jack Nicholson?
Oh,
that would work.
They offered him the role and he turned it down.
Really?
I could see that.
Did you see this on Movie Web?
No. I saw it on other stuff.
IMDb?
No.
They're wrong most of the time, too.
No, but I did do some research.
Robin Williams, huh?
He could do it. I mean, he does...
He could do it.
What's that movie that he played with Al Pacino? It's like a nutty... Killer. I don't even know what
it's. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Hillary
Insomnia. Swank. Is that it?
Insomnia. Hillary Swank was in.
He was creepy as hell.
He can do anything.
He really can. I couldn't see him putting his head. I would laugh. And he said, "Here's Johnny. You know, here's Mork." I don't know.
He'd do his stupid Nicholson impression.
Yeah, yeah. Number three. Would you know this? Mm. You've heard this rumor. What? You love the guy. I love. This is the best Batman in my eyes. Michael Keaton is Batman. Mm. Who'd you hear rumored to play him and turn it down?
When, in 89?
89.
I don't remember.
Bill Murray.
Oh, geez, really?
Remember wow. I actually remember that rumor and a comedian, you know, Bill Murray going to put on the cow, the cape. He would have, I don't know, he would have been maybe an okay Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
But I couldn't see him in the outfit.
I can't see him doing action. I could see him doing he's proved that he can do all kinds of stuff.
Oh, right.
But I don't know about action.
Just what the fuck was Bill Murray, you know, Nicholson, you know, Murray. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I did have kind of related to that. It's not on my final list, but I did have Michael Keaton on my list as a what the fuck reaction when I heard about it, but then with the note that I actually ended up working out well, but I had even bigger what the fucks once I tallied up my list.
Now, my number two is one of Christie's favorite actors of all time. Dave, do you remember who?
Stallone?
Yeah. Do you remember who was, well, I just told, Axel Foley was written for Stallone.
You told me that.
Yeah.
That would not have worked.
Never.
Yeah.
No way in hell.
It probably wouldn't have been as funny then.
And then I heard, I heard that they rewrote it and made a Cobra.
Okay.
That was another kind of storyline it took. They offered Axel Foley. Yeah, it wouldn't have been funny at all.
Yeah.
Even though Christie loves the guy.
And he can be funny.
Now, I'm telling you. Oh, yeah. Telling you now, you know it. Matt knows it. What actor almost got, you know, the role and is like history?
Tom Selleck.
Tom Selleck, yeah. And Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
What if Magnum was Indy?
I like Tom Selleck, but he does. He does not have the gravitas.
Didn't he do Quinby Down Under? Wasn't that his?
That's right.
That was his answer to Indiana Jones or something.
I can do it. Look, yeah, and then he tried that shit.
Yeah, he can't do it.
No.
Yeah.
Good actor.
That was my top five. What the fuck are these people took the characters, actors, roles that were offered to somebody else? What?
Chris did his own list.
I did.
It's like.
Every time I saw these lists, I'm like, I love Kevin Costner's Robin Hood. No, I would not write that down.
Don't look at these other lists. Come up with your own list.
But everything I looked at, I like.
Why didn't you? You know what? I thought this for real was going to be on your list. Number one, T. Dalt as James Bond.
I'll redo my list.
Yeah,
I would do it right now.
Yeah,
Bond, James Bond. Hit that guy. There you go. Take it.
All right. I'll take it. So we can just get this over with.
Thank you.
All right. My top five. First, my honorable mention, which is everyone except Ray Park and G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra.
That's your honorable mention?
Yeah, because everyone else in that is miscast. Okay. But now my number five. My number five, this movie, every other actor in this movie gets blamed for the role they have, except this person, and I think this is the worst. I mean, when it was first announced and first on the poster, I was like, okay, sure. And then I watched the movie, and I'm like, what the fuck? And it's the fat, lackluster, boring, fat, terrible, fat, stupid, fat, not movie, can't kick, fat Alicia Silverstone as Batgirl in Batman and Robin. Oh, she's horrible in that movie. She's like, everyone likes to jump down George Clooney and Arnold Schwarzenegger, but I think she is far worse than any of those two in this movie.
She looked good though.
Oh, she was terrible. She looked horrible. She was like that. She was making that spandex work, hold together.
I couldn't write down her name.
Yeah, of course you can't.
Because it was Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, I may be the only one that even knows about this. And when it had, this is like the most inconsequential cameo. They could have taken this out of the movie and it wouldn't have affected the movie. And it's like, there's no reason for it whatsoever. And it's Christian Slater's completely unnecessary cameo in Star Trek VI.
Star Trek. Oh, he was just like on the bridge or something.
No,
right?
He's at the doorway of on the God, I can't believe I know this much detail. The doorway of the Excelsior, of the captain's quarters, leaning against it, looking all cool, going, Captain, Starfleet's been trying to reach you for the past 5 minutes.
Sounds like Robin Williams, Jack Nicholson.
Oh, God. There's no reason for him to be in that movie. But
I remember watching that with you guys at a midnight showing, and I remember, like, maybe it was even Matt. Somebody was like, was that just Christian Slater?
Yeah, probably was. Number three is the movie version of my all-time favorite book, the only book that I've reread more than once and still reread now and again. And when I heard the casting for this character, I was like, what the fuck? And even during the movie, I'm like, what the fuck? And it wasn't until, like, the ending, the finale, where he finally grew on me and won me over, and that was Mos Def as Ford Prefect in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, I like Mos Def.
I do now, but at the time, I was like, who the hell is Mos Def? And I'm looking up, and all I can find is his rap records. I'm like, why is this guy playing the second most important character in this iconic book? Who is this guy? What the fuck? And then he won me over in the end. Number two is
based on a popular book like that.
Yeah,
is already in trouble.
It is. Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, I mean, you are, for fans of it like me, and I think Dave Smith too. It's very, you're gonna be very critical of every decision made. So there was gonna be at least one person that you're like, wow, no, you can't do that, and that was the one for me. Number two, go ahead, Chris. You couldn't write it down, I'm sure. It was Topher Grace as Eddie Brock / Venom in Spider-Man 3.
I didn't think of that one. I didn't see that one.
That was, I mean, by the time the movie came out, the whole movie was a what the fuck. But when I heard that, I was like, Topher Grace is Eddie Brock? Anyone that's ever read the comic? Eddie Brock is a huge, muscular, fit guy. Topher Grace is Topher Grace.
Nothing like that, yeah.
I didn't mind him.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, I mean, he was, you know, by the time his part in the movie came up, he was fine, but the whole movie was fucked at that point. I didn't even give a shit.
Well, those Raimi Spider-Man movies are all a nightmare, I think. Especially after seeing the first one. Yeah.
And then number one, we already had the discussion. We don't need to have it any further.
Come on.
But it's Kevin Costner as Robin Wood. I mean, Hood.
That was funny. I knew it as soon as I saw.
That's why Matt made the list.
Chris was like, "What's the list?" And Matt put it out. I was like, "Yeah, here we go."
Yep. And it wasn't even. You know what? I'll tell you. It wasn't even a what the fuck when the movie was announced. It was during the watching for me. Like, what the fuck is he doing? My God, we take it back. What does that mean?
It's not that bad.
It's terrible.
Is that in 90 or 91?
Doesn't matter. I'm watching it again.
Would be 91.
It had to be. Yeah, I wasn't working at the.
It was 91 because it was senior year. We were like, that was like the movie that all of us had to go see.
I wanted to do it
twice.
Well, we can't. It's 91. Sorry.
We should make an exception.
Yeah,
I'll make an exception for that. I'll do that.
Oh. I think we should.
We can't even get regular episodes out with movies on the 80s. Now we're gonna do a special episode that. On the 90s?
That one should be the Grady's with an asterisk.
Yeah.
Come on.
It'll be called The Grady's and Shitty Movies by Kevin Costner.
The Grady's and Other Terrible Fucking Movies.
That's what I thought Matt was going to do. I thought all five were going to be Costner.
No, I'm not that.
Like Costner and this, Costner and that.
Well, no. The Dreams, Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Always way up.
No, I'm not that petty. Well, I am, but not this episode.
But the fact that you both have that as your number one, yeah.
Something's going on there.
We actually did not confer before this reading.
Yeah.
Christy, come on.
You know I hate that movie.
I respect your opinion. You are an astute person in lots of ways. How can you put that as your number one thing?
Because I know how to keep an accent through an entire movie.
You know,
my biggest thing is that damn accent. I can respect any other choices he made, but don't start with a British accent and then go, fuck it.
And then halfway through, well, accents are hard. I'm not going to do it anymore.
Is that your Kevin Costner impression?
That's one of my many voices of Kevin Costner.
back, and to the left. That's mine.
My God, accents are hard. I'm going to stop doing it, except for this one, which I don't even know where it came from.
Oh, you're hurting us.
This is the last episode of the Gradys.
It is not.
It is.
Aw.
Last one with me on it. No, the accent thing does bother me because my go-to is always DiCaprio. And that's the first thing I wrote down. It was DiCaprio with any, like, I don't know why anyone would cast him with something where he needs to do an accent, because I do like him and I think he's good at some things. I think he's good when he plays an American. When he has to do an accent, like in Blood Diamond or Gangs of New York or The Departed, I mean, not that he's not playing an American, The Departed, but he cannot do an accent. And to me, that's a WTF. If you're going to cast somebody and you need to do an accent, do not call that guy.
I can't tell you one Leonardo DiCaprio movie I've ever seen, and that includes Titanic, so that didn't even occur to me.
Really?
Yeah, I just don't see the movies he's in do not interest me. It's not him. It's the movies he does. None of them have been on my want-to-see list.
Right. I think he's a talented guy.
I'm sure he is. I have no opinion of him because, like I said, his body of work is just not my cup of tea.
I thought you were going to go right back to Connery and do Hunt for Red October.
Oh, I loved him in that movie.
But that's the same thing. He's a Scotsman as a Russian. It's like it's the same accent.
But he does speak
Russian. He speaks Russian in that, though.
Speaks Scottish Russian.
Yeah, okay.
Discussion.
Well, I'm not going to say these are the only five what the fucks in my life I've ever had. So, I mean, there's tons more.
Have dinner with Costner or Lambert?
Lambert probably eats like a fucking child because he can't see anything.
Costner can pay for it.
That took me a while. That was good.
Spare change.
You'd have to go to McDonald's if Lambert was paying. Yeah.
We will go eat, but it's 2-for-1 McRib night.
20 piece chicken nugget, $5.99.
Just give him a log and he won't know the difference. Man, this McRib is overcooked.
I'm sending it back to the chef.
Oh, it's a shame.
You know what's a good one? And I thought Matt was going to say this too. Because I don't know the history about this too much, but I know up until about 1980, Leslie Nielsen was like a serious actor. Yeah,
to me though, and this is where it didn't come on my list. Leslie Nielsen started in my life as a comic, so it was never what the fuck to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I totally understand. That's why I put it on my list either. But I wonder if people in like 1979, when they read in some Variety that Leslie Nielsen was going to be in a comedy, they're like, what? Leslie Nielsen's a serious actor.
My father, we've had this discussion. My father had said when he was on MASH,
yeah,
is the first time he was like, what? What is this guy doing? And I guess he was serious in MASH, but that was like, I guess that was the turning point. He had done MASH and then he had done Police Squad, and that's where he's like, he said that at the time just was a huge surprise to anyone that knew who he was.
I get it. Yeah, that did. That's funny. I like it when people do that. I mean, some people do. I hate Alec Baldwin, but he seems to have taken his career from like one extreme to the other. He was like a very serious actor and now he's like a comic.
Yeah, like, weird.
It's interesting that people can do that.
Yeah.
So well, those were all good lists.
Yeah.
The number ones on half of them.
No, they're best. Those are the best ones. Mm-hmm. That's true. Chris's What If, the fictional list number one, was pretty bad. Mm. What was it again? I don't know.
It was What If someone took the role that someone else got, but they were offered it, but it was a while ago, so no one cares.
Yep. Stop. Okay. Well, in our rotation of the Gradys next year, on our next episode, we will feature Christy and her choice of movies, and she is going to now reveal to us or let us try to figure out what that is. What are you going?
Well,
take it, Christy. That's the word I'm looking for.
Well, we're going to have a little competition, folks.
Ooh.
So I'm going to read three lines. I have three lines from this movie. If you can guess it in the first one, you win absolutely nothing.
Come on.
But you're right.
You can't have a competition and not have us. Well,
text me a boob.
I'm a very competitive. Yeah, we want selfies.
I'll text you a boob. Yeah, we'll text you a boob.
I'll text you boobs.
I want a boob with a dog.
All right.
Okay.
Send me a boob picture.
We got to get this.
All right. Okay. Here's your first line.
He's looking it up.
You got those. I like those on a woman.
That sounds so fucking familiar, too.
You got those. I like those on a woman.
Oh, my God. That sounds so familiar.
I don't know it. Johnny Dangerously.
You win, Dave.
Whoa!
Ding, 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 ding.
Where's my phone?
Your phone doesn't get pictures. It's from the past.
Send it to me. I'll show you.
Send it to Chris.
Boobies. Boobies. Boobies.
Hold on. Give me a second. Hold on. Let me take a selfie.
God damn. Dave. Get your phone. Get your phone.
You have Chris's number in your phone?
No, I don't.
Oh. Here, take it with my phone.
I have Dave's. but I don't have.
And Dave's doesn't get pictures.
My phone still plugs in.
His phone is from the past.
His phone's still on the wall at his house.
Yeah, my phone is the one Michael Douglas used in Wall Street.
It says Edison on it.
That was terrible casting.
There you go, boys.
Nothing yet. Nothing. I'm waiting. I get
as soon as that thing.
I got lotion in my. I got lotion in my.
What are you laughing at?
That's a boob. Chris, your chest is awfully hairy.
What is
hey,
it?
Hey!
No! Your chest is off. I didn't even have that much hair in my nip.
Shh. Don't tell anybody.
I'm going to zoom in there. There it is.
It's not that bad.
It looks like an eyeball close up.
Chris has it all. You got to crop and save that.
Okay. No.
That's going right on Facebook.
I'll be watching Facebook for the next 48 hours.
I'll send it back. What I did that took. I zoomed in. It's all I see is a nip.
A nip. It's really not that bad. I mean, it'll do.
I will suck okay.
I don't feel good.
Here, man. Here. Your nipple back to you. But zoomed in. That was a good guess. I knew it sounded familiar. I was like, I heard that.
Yeah, because my next one was gonna give it
That's
away.
That's a lot of nipple. That looks like it looks like a fucking atomic blast from the sky.
It looks like the red spot on Mars.
Jupiter. It looks like the red storm of Jupiter.
It looks like a cut circle in Signs.
It looks like what I think about every night when I jerk off.
Like that. Was Luke in the room?
Yeah, he's up in bed waiting.
He's like lurking.
Though. He's on the staircase.
I think he's trying to see the picture.
He was. See this nipple too. I'll show him. Hey, good night, Luke. Here, look at this.
So, Johnny Dangerously it is.
Johnny Dangerously it is. That's great. I like that movie. I will have fun watching that movie, and we'll do it sooner because it's a good movie to watch.
So, yes, and I will be hosting.
That's right. She's going to host.
So, Dave, you have to do is watch the movie. That's all you got to do.
That's all you got to do.
Well, by when?
Our 10th anniversary.
I can do that.
Once a month. We've got June now. We got all June.
Yeah, I'm kind of busy, though. I think you should have open auditions for people that are listening to replace me.
No!
What about that? There's some good people out there.
All right. Well, can we wrap this up?
All right. Join us next time, supposedly. When
maybe
when we discuss what year is that? 19 I'm trying to find it. Where the hell is it?
Early 84, 83? I don't know. Early 80s, I would think.
1984. So when we discuss 1984's Johnny Dangerously.
Once.
And thanks for listening. Forget that part.
You're from Saturday Night Live. You're Joe Pickton.
I'm Danny Berman. This chump was going to show you some previews for a new gangster movie called Johnny Dangerously. Check this out. Does this jerk look like a real gangster to you? He looks like Michael Keaton to me.
I love Johnny T-shirts. I love Johnny.
Believe it or not, everybody loves this guy. Broads love him.
I'm not wearing a bra, Johnny.
That makes two of us.
Oh!
You got what you had left, Ma.
His mother loves him.
I love him, but someday I'm gonna knock him on his...
We should spend some time together.
The DA loves him.
See, 2 weeks in Puerto Rico.
get fire. Verb.
The new torch singer loves them.
Get those. I like those on them.
Little babies love them.
Oh, wait. Yes.
The warden loves them.
Johnny, it's an honor to have you on Guff Road.
Ah, don't be silly. Pleasure's all mine.
Even the Pope loves them.
Go get yourself a new gym at the Vatican, eh?
Well, this is one guy who ain't got no love for this phony.
You shouldn't hang me on a hook. My father hung me on a hook once. Once.
Well, Johnny's busted Mike Chops for the last time.
Gee, he looked like a terrific guy to me.
Oops.
Michael Keaton,
Joe Piscopo, Danny DeVito, Dom DeLuise, Henry, Peter Boyle, Green Stable, Griffin Dunne, Dennis O'Connor, Richard Dimitri, Alan Hale, Ray Jr. Walston.
See Johnny Dangerously at a selected theater near you.
I knew somebody who went to a selected theater once.
Title song by Weird Al Yankovic.